Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is a common refrain among people in Iowa who love the wilderness that we just don't have enough of it here in Iowa. But there is a little slice of wilderness that's very close to you, wherever you are, and you can enjoy it if you're willing to get a little wet every now and then. Today we are out paddling with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We also brought along Iowa Public Radio producer Emily Woodbury, although her main duties today also involve paddling. And we're learning about Iowa's waterways, the kind of wildlife we can see as we paddle along, and talking about water quality as well.
Okay, so here we are 239 miles on the South Skunk River, 239 miles from the mouth of the South Skunk where it enters the Mississippi. We're in Story County, so we're originating on the old Des Moines lobe of the glacier. And this river, of course, has a very strong glacial origin, as you see from the beaches and everything. There's lots of glacial cobble, that unsorted mix of rounded stones that originated much farther north in Minnesota or even in Canada. We'll try and not slap you with branches as we go down the river, but there's a chance that we may have that. And the river's running quite shallow. The river's running quite shallow, so not good for sound quality.
Obviously, we're in a canoe today that facilitates this conversation, to be in a canoe. What do you prefer these days? Do you prefer to kayak or canoe?
You know, on rivers, I really prefer to kayak because, well, for me, I'm paddling a lot alone. My wife loves to canoe, but when I'm doing the river surveys, the biological surveys, we're spending a lot of time. She puts me in an access in the morning and usually meets me for lunch and then picks me up in the evening in an access 15 to 20 miles downriver. And the advantage of paddling alone is that you're not talking. And so I can paddle alone and sneak up on all kinds of things. Here's our first portage. We'll have to go around this tree. This is a more recent fall into the river. So we'll have to get out, take the canoe around it, and put it back in. So, beaches are wonderful things on Iowa rivers. Every time you have an outside bend in the river, you usually get a beach on the inside. And it's a great place to look for tracks. On this beach, I see lots and lots of deer tracks. So, and these are pretty fresh. These probably came from either last night or early this morning. They're dried out a little bit since we've come here. But often you'll see everything from squirrel, beaver, otter, lots and lots of other species that inhabit. A raccoon. They'll be in the mud or even in the sand, as these are in the sand on the side of the river. And it's one of the things about this particular river. So we're surrounded on both sides by woodland. Rivers are, in Iowa, are the most important corridors of habitat, the ribbons of habitat that we have left. We have drained 95 to 98% of the wetlands. We converted 99.9% of the prairies that were once here. Even the woodlands were down to probably 30 or 40% of what was once here. So the rivers are the only corridors of habitat that we have left. And they are the most critical because of that connection through the landscape in what is otherwise, and you think of this here in Story County, really a sea of agriculture, some of the most productive land in the world. The rivers are the critical habitat for all kinds of species because they provide that corridor through the landscape. So they're really, really critical. Now this corridor, as most Iowa rivers, not all, but most Iowa rivers, flow through a wooded habitat. And we're seeing here, we're seeing silver maple, some cottonwoods, box elder, trees that don't mind having their roots in the water, you know, having wet feet, as it were. And they'll be the ones that are closest to river, willows, that sort of thing. And then as you go farther up, you begin to see as the land rises just a little bit, some trees that are a little more tolerant, they can't have their roots in the water for long. But things like walnut, a lot of the ashes, they will grow on those benches just above the river level. So it's a really important corridor of habitat, and most of them are pretty diverse, amazingly diverse.
So this habitat runs not just through the agricultural land, but through our cities, through our towns too.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you think about Iowa Falls, Cedar Rapids, when Euro-Americans first came here in the 1830s and 1840s and 50s and began to settle, we settled along rivers. And so those towns have their names because of the rivers. Cedar Falls, the Cedar River had a big falls there. The Cedar Rapids had a rapids there. Iowa Falls, you know, they had a falls there. So a lot of those towns, and we settled along the rivers for several reasons. We certainly provided transportation. It provided power to construct for mills, both grist mills and lumber mills and all kinds of things. It provided something that would take the waste away. So away meaning downriver. You know, so for those major reasons, we settled along rivers. And of course, I think over time, we tended to take rivers for granted as a result. We tended to assume they would always be there, they would always take the waste away, and gradually I think we've discovered that away just means downstream to somebody else downstream. So we're beginning, I think, to understand a lot more about how important our rivers are, and from a wildlife standpoint, they are absolutely critical.
Well, and I can hear cars and trucks in the distance, and you know, I think about the fact that we built our highways to bypass rivers now, but this is still the highway for right. Almost every other species.
Exactly. It is the highway, the ribbon of highway that they use for transportation. So absolutely.
All right. Go ahead and get in. We'll have to do this several more times.
Yes, I'm worrying more about my equipment than my balance.
Yeah.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we are paddling on the Skunk River with wildlife biologist Jim Pease.
This is a big log jam here. We'll go to the left here, Emily. And this was at one time a huge log jam that stood 12, 14, 15 feet high. And this spring it was open. But you can see what's happened in the high water since. We've had it plug up again, so we'll have to get out and go around it here. You know, log piles like this, we look at these and we say these are really hazards for paddlers, and they are. You know, you want to take them seriously, there's no question. But they're also habitat. They're hazards for paddlers, but they're habitat for wildlife. So all kinds of things will live underneath those logs. Lots of fish, lots of insect larvae, and insect nymphs, the earlier forms of insects.
Well, I can see a lot of dragonflies right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And those become sort of the base of the food chain for everything on up. So those, we look at these and we say, gee, that's ugly, and that's it traps lots of garbage, and they do. But actually, it's also habitat, and it's a really important habitat. In fact, I've watched this summer something I hadn't seen before. I'm watching the orioles the last couple weeks that I've been paddling Orioles get into these log piles and they hang from the logs upside down and glean insects off the bottom sides of the logs and take them back to their young. Because even though they're fruit eaters as adults, they have to have real high protein levels to grow from little tiny hatchlings up to fledglings. So they get that from insects, not from fruit. So one of the things, you paddle along and there are creeks that flow in from each side. And of course those creeks now, because it's midsummer, most of those creeks are dry. So we're seeing what look like gully erosion. They're not. They're former creek beds that are now dry. Won't be dry if we get another rainstorm though, because many of those creeks are fed, of course, by the tile flow from many of the agricultural fields or from towns and cities along the way.
We've talked about the amount of garbage that goes into rivers and streams, and for a long time people did have that feeling that anything they put in the water just disappeared. Yeah. But are you seeing that getting better? It feels like awareness of that has really grown.
Oh yeah, it's much, much better. In fact, if you think about an old-time conservationist who made awareness of that was a cartoonist for the Des Moines Register by the name of Ding Darling. Back in the 20s and 30s, he was talking about how much garbage we were putting into our rivers. And because of the Clean Water Act and as you say, general awareness, we've cleaned up a lot. We have different problems now. We have too high nutrient loads in our rivers, and we know that. And we have to, as a society, decide how we're going to solve that. Not if we're going to solve it, but how we're going to solve it. And find a way as a group to do that. That's the challenge, I think, for not just for politicians, but for citizens to speak out and say, okay, we're going to find this way to reduce the nutrient load, because we're all in this together and our rivers are one of our most important natural resources.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Today we are out paddling on the Skunk River in Storey County with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're learning about what we can see along the way and talking about some of the bigger issues for Iowa's water and water quality. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we are getting up close and personal with the Skunk River in Storey County. We are out paddling on the river with wildlife biologist Jim Pease as we learn about what we can see as we paddle along some of Iowa's rivers and talking about water quality and the water in Iowa. We did a show recently about lakes in Iowa, and of course the nutrient load in lakes has a very visible impact for people, because you can see the algae, you can see the blue-green algae, and you can see what that's doing to the lake, and a lot of people around lakes are working hard to reverse the effects of this nutrient load. What effects do you see on the rivers you paddle?
Well, with nutrients, it's not as obvious as it is in lakes, because the algae, while you do get blooms in rivers will turn sort of pea green sometimes, particularly if they slow down. So you get these blooms in the river, but it's often much more subtle than that. We don't know, for example, fully what the impacts are. We just barely know what the impacts are on high nitrogen in humans. What we don't know is what's the impact on wildlife, and it may be none, it may be considerable. For example, animals that filter water, things like mussels that spend a lot of time getting filtering water to get zooplankton and phytoplankton out of the water. What's the impact of that filtering? Very high nutrient loads. We really don't know. So it's sort of a, while it's not as obvious as it is in lakes, unless you're taking as many of our human water sources do, where we're taking river water or well water that comes from the river with very high nutrient loads. We know what it does to humans. We don't know what the impact is on wildlife. You hear that rattle? That's a rattle of a kingfisher. A kingfisher, which is a beautiful bird that is on, again, almost all of our Iowa rivers. And he's probably nesting. We'll see if we can find some holes in some of the clay banks along the way, because they will dig a nest. They'll dig a hole in a clay bank that will go back as much as 10 feet into the bank and put a nest at the end of it. And so they're actually very common along Iowa rivers, because we've got lots of banks for them to nest in. And they're the ones that actually they'll sit on a branch above a river and dive in beak first, grab a fish right out of there and fly up and eat it or take it back.
And they have those very long, impressive looking beaks.
They do. It's about 3 inches long. So this is for a bird that is, blue jay sized, a little bigger than that, not much. A 3-inch beak is a big beak, and it's really well made.
Of course, this river will eventually head to the Mississippi, and then the Mississippi, of course, heads to the Gulf of Mexico. And we do know about the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So we do know what an incredible nutrient load, when all of those nutrients that have been flowing down all of these different rivers and creeks, all of them come together, we know what an impact that can have on an ecosystem.
Right, exactly. And that's the impact. But again, it's just taking it away, you know.
We have a really hard time thinking about the future and thinking about things that are far away and what we're doing here, how that impacts that.
Exactly. And that's the thing that we have to take responsibility for. We have to take responsibility for what we're doing here does not only to other people, but other places and other things that are farther downstream. And I think we're getting there. We're getting there as a society. We are beginning to not only understand it better, but to take more responsibility. You look at what's the kinds of awareness that we've gotten over the past 15 years with the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a great blue heron down the river, standing on the sandbar. Can you see him down there? Yeah.
Oh, he's beautiful.
He's that sort of blue-gray, stands 3 to 4 feet tall, depending on whether his neck is stretched out or not. When they fly, their beak is about 8 to 10 inches long, so they can grab a big fish if they want to. So he sees us and he hears us, and he's just saying, "Well, do I need to worry about them or not? I think I saw this guy before." He's heading for the shallows now, and I think he's going to fly. And it's one of the two common herons in Iowa. We also have the green heron, which is quite a bit smaller, and they have a different sort of hunting strategy than the great blues do. The greens will sit on a log just over the water or on a branch and be absolutely motionless and wait for something to swim by. The great blues, on the other hand, are a little more active. He's flying right over us now. Beautiful. Legs out behind, neck tucked up in a nest. Look at that. From behind, you can see the M, the sort of the smooth-topped M in his wings. And the great blue will walk slowly through shallow water, and he'll still use stealth, but he's a little more active than the little green heron.
Jim, you've got a pair of binoculars around your neck. Do you always paddle with binoculars?
I do. I have to say that I do. Even in really, really hot weather, I tend to always have binocs, because it allows you to see those birds along the shoreline. If they don't want to come close, I can get close to them to see them better with Binox. So yeah, and these are waterproof. They've been in the water more than a couple of times, and so they are waterproof and do well at they're perfect for canoeing and kayaking. Like many Iowa rivers this time of year, we have lots of mid-river sandbars, in this case rock bars, because this is very much a river that is controlled, or is a product of the glacier, and so there's lots and lots of sand and rock in here. But lots of times, if you have a log that settles on the bottom, the water downstream slows down, so any of the sediment that's in it, including sand and that, settles out below it. So that's how you begin to build mid-river sandbars, and they're very common in Iowa rivers, very, very common. So here's our next portage around, to speak it in French, portage. It's a fancy term for getting out and carrying the canoe around a tree that is fresh down in the river. This is an interesting tree. We'll take a look at it, but this is actually, nice job on the bow rudder there. This is actually tells us something about the landscape. If you see a lot of these, this is a tree that is not eaten by cattle. It's a native tree. It's a honey locust. It's the one with great big long spines, spines that are 6 and 8 inches long. And I can look at the landscape as I paddle along, and if there are a lot of honey locusts, I know that this land has been grazed, because when you get a lot of grazing, that's the only thing that survives the grazing. So when you see a dense stand of honey locusts, you know that it's been that woods has been grazed, and the honey locusts survived.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebby. Today we are paddling on the Skunk River with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're not spending a long time on the water today, but probably about an hour and a half. How far do you think we'll travel in that time?
We'll go about 4 miles in an hour and a half.
So this is not a way to travel if you're in a hurry. You have to kind of reset your mindset, right?
Yeah, and in fact, on Iowa rivers that have not been altered, like this one has not been, this section of this river has not been altered. So it meanders over the landscape back and forth in all these S-curves. So from a straight line distance, you may only go 2 miles, but it's going to take us 4 miles to do that because it does meander back and forth so much. There are other portions of the Skunk. In fact, the part that flows through northeastern Polk County, just to the south of us, where the river has been straightened or channelized. And a lot of rivers in Iowa were either partially channelized back in the 20s and 30s, when we thought we knew we could engineer a river. And so we made lots of attempts, I think, our ancestors made lots of attempts to increase the amount of farmland or straighten out that river, make it take that water downstream more quickly. And of course, that works until you have a flood. And then the river decides what it's where it wants to flow and how it wants to flow.
Well, and channelizing rivers didn't end in the 20s or 30s. I mean, I remember creeks being straightened when I was a kid,
yeah.
In the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. When you were a kid. In the 20s and 30s? No, I don't think so. 1920s and 30s. That's true. There's certainly some straightening going on today, but the major straightening of rivers pretty well ended because it's very expensive and very very labor-intensive to do.
Well, and we learned a lot about especially erosion and how that can dramatically increase the amount of erosion from a farm field just to have the creek running straight along the edge.
Yeah, exactly. It increases the erosion and decreases the ability of the river to do what rivers want to do, and that's meander more gently over the landscape. Right, now, these trees that are leaning over the river, these are silver maples. There's one of the ones that likes to, what's your head? Doesn't mind having its feet in the water, its roots in the water. And so we're going around a big curve right now, and this is a huge exposure of bank. And you can see a lot of the trees have slipped down into the water. Now, one of the things these banks do, of course, is they do provide habitat. I'm beginning to see, for example, right now, several rough-winged swallows. There are two swallows that nest in the banks. The little brown ones, just kind of plain brown with white bellies, are rough wings, and that's what we're seeing here. And if you look up just underneath where the grass is above, you can see holes in the bank, and they actually nest in those holes. They dig them themselves. This is a little swallow digs a bank, digs a hole in the bank anywhere from a foot to 2 or 3 feet back into the bank. It's amazing that they can do that. So bank swallows and rough-winged swallows both build their nests in these big clay riverbanks. The difference is the bank swallows have very large colonies. You may see 100, 200 holes in a bank, whereas the rough wings are a little more solitary. You see one or two or three together at a time.
How many rivers in Iowa do you think you've paddled?
Ah, that's great. I paddled portions, either all or parts of 28 rivers. So I've gotten to date, I'm something over 1,800 miles of Iowa rivers in the last 4 summers. So I just feel so privileged to be able to do that. It's just such we are a land that is rich in rivers, and we need to honor them, keep them clean, enjoy them, recreate on them, use them for our needs, but to make sure that they are going to be here for the future as well.
This is a completely unfair question, but do you have a favorite spot or maybe a top three? I mean, we're on your home river today. We're on the Skunk River.
Yeah, the Skunk is one of my favorites. In part, I guess it's that the fact that I grew up on it. There's another great blue heron right around the corner here. Maybe the same one that we saw earlier. He just flew downriver, and he's going to accompany us farther downriver now. And it has some beautiful sections. The section that we're on, just a 4-mile section between two bridges. It's very wild on both sides, and it's that feeling of wildness. Even though you would go a quarter mile in either direction and you're in either a town, a city, a road, or a farm field, the feel that you get in this section of river is one of wildness. And that's a tribute, I think, to the river as much as anything. And the fact that it has survived all those years of challenges, both from nature and from humans. But I have lots of other rivers that I really, really like for different reasons. There's parts of the Little Sioux in northern Iowa where you're not paddling through woodland like we are here, but you're paddling through prairie. And that's an amazing feeling, because here you have prairie plants that are right up to the edge of the river and really provide really have a different feel to them, or feel to the river, because you are paddling through prairie and it's wide open. You have to do that at the right time of year too, because it can be very hot. You can't get in the shade of any of these trees sometimes. So there are lots of other rivers in the state. Each one has its. I just paddled this summer part of the North Raccoon in Sac County that is just absolutely gorgeous section of river. It has some big big savannas, huge old oaks that have been there for 150 or 200 years, you know. And you can see those up on the bluffs above the river. It's a nice wide corridor. The landowners there have taken very good care to make sure that corridor still exists. And so that's a very, very exciting thing to see, where people care enough to really take care of a river. We're going to have to portage again here.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Today we are out on the Skunk River in Story County, paddling along with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We'll continue our journey in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are taking a journey down the Skunk River in Story County. We are paddling along today with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. I see
there's
a dragonfly.
A beautiful dragonfly. Yeah, incredible dragonflies. Dragonflies are our paddler's friend, because they will not only light on the bow of your boat as you paddle along, but they spend time catching. They're probably the best mosquito catcher we have. They fly around in the air and capture gnats and mosquitoes and no-see-ums right out of the air with their mouths. It's just amazing. So.
Well, and we're looking in the shallows here. I've seen a lot of little schools of minnows in the shallows and some collections of little bugs.
Yeah, there could be nymphs of mayflies, damselflies, of dragonflies. Of you might get horsehair worms that exist in very very warm shallow waters that are low in oxygen. They can exist there. Usually they're not so much in rivers, because unless it's in a real backwater like in here, you might find some in the shallows over there. But we also will find bugs on the surface, and we'll see as we go downriver. We'll probably see water striders. And my favorite water beetle is called the whirligig beetle. And they're the little black ones that float on top of the water. They float so that exactly half their body is below water and half is above. Their eyes are split in half, so they have eyes below, compound eyes below the water and compound eyes above the water. And they just move so fast on the surface of the water. They're incredible. So we should see some of both as we go along here. Oh, there's a beautiful damselfly. That's a black-winged emerald, green body with coal black wings. Really gorgeous damselfly. You know the difference between damselflies and dragonflies?
No.
The damselflies fold their wings up, so when they're resting, you can see he's got his wings folded right up, whereas the dragonflies rest with their wings out on the horizontal. So you can tell the difference right away. And there are lots of species in the state. 58 species of dragonflies in the state. It's amazing. So you can become an expert, and you could on the odonates, on the dragonflies and damselflies.
So right now we're stopped because we had to portage a little bit, but of course stopping along the way is something people love to do when they go paddling. They love to stop and splash in the water. Are you concerned? I know that there have been stories about enthusiastic paddlers in the last few years saying, you know what, we don't go out anymore because we're so concerned about the water quality in Iowa. How about you? Do you feel uncomfortable?
No, I don't. I honestly, like I say, I grew up in the Mississippi and spent a lot of time swimming there, and it hasn't affected me a bit, except for this little tick I have. I grew up swimming and paddling the Mississippi, and certainly things were no better than if they weren't I would suspect they were a whole lot worse. I also worked in the sewage treatment plant as a senior in high school. So I learned a lot about what goes into...
Where you had been swimming,
yes,
right?
Yes, I no longer swam below the sewage outfall, but I was still swimming below other cities' sewage outfalls farther north, you know, salt. So no, I'm not as concerned with nutrient loads in terms of human health, but I'm not ingesting the water. Certainly if you have young children, I'd be a little more concerned about it, but I'm not ingesting the water directly. I'm cooling off and paddling over it, so no, I think that's an overreaction, but certainly the concerns about high nitrate levels for human consumption is a very great concern, and certainly with what it's done to the hypoxia region, the no oxygen region in the Gulf is a very serious concern. So we got to clean them up. We're making progress, but and the idea to me, when I see how far we've come, I've been on this earth now almost 69 years, and I see how far we have come since I was a child. We're making progress. We got a long ways to go, but we are making progress, no question.
Right now, there's been the progress that we're making has caused a lot of controversy. People are fighting about whether or not this is something we need to be worried about in Iowa, or what we need to do about it if we are worried about it in Iowa. How do you feel about the progress we're making at the moment?
At the moment, I'd say we've got a long ways to go, because as a society, as a state, back in 2010, 63% of the voters in that otherwise very conservative election said, let's tax ourselves, let us, they passed a constitutional amendment that had been passed by two sessions of the legislature to actually create a natural resources and outdoor recreation trust fund. It was called the I Will, Iowa's Water and Land Legacy legislation. And they created this trust fund, but it was not funded then. It had to be funded by the legislature. And the legislature, for the past 7 years, has decided, no, we're not going to fund that. And it does take a legislature that will say, we're going to increase the sales tax by 3/8 of 1 cent and all that money goes into this trust fund that can be used for rivers, for water quality, for outdoor recreation, for cleaning up dams, for repairing all the work in our parks. But this last legislature in particular seemed to deny all of that and refuse to consider. Several legislatures have refused to consider funding that fund, and I think that's a shame. And it's not doing the will of the people. It will help us in the long run, and it's such a piddly amount. There are some who say that, gee, well, that's some on both sides that say, well, that's a regressive tax. But fortunately in Iowa, essential services and food are exempted from sales tax, so we don't have that worry. It's not as regressive as it is in other states where those things are not exempted. So it's the best way. It's probably not the only way to fund that fund, but it is the best way. There's a committee that looked at that for several years before that law was passed. So I think we ought to fund that. And if we do, we're going to help clean up our waters. It'll help soil conservation. It'll help wildlife. It'll help people. It just makes sense to me to get it done. Well, you see these slides down the river?
Mm-hmm.
So these are, some of those are made by beaver as they go up into the woods to cut logs. Some are made by otters. And some are made by deer as they slide down the bank to try to either get across or come down for a drink. So lots and lots of signs of wildlife, even if you don't see the wildlife along the way. If you're with a group and you know the group's too noisy, you have to look for the signs, the tracks, the trails, all those other things along the way.
Can you see right under the fallen tree? It's just crouched right there. Is that a beaver or is it a muskrat?
This one is a muskrat. And he is, they also build holes and dens along the bank. See that? They have a laterally flattened tail, and they use it like a rudder in the water for steering as they go through. Muskrats, he allowed us to get up to him because they're pretty nearsighted. So muskrats will also, you can see how he's making use of this log pile for protection. And he probably has a hole in the bank right below the poison ivy that's dripped down over the bank there. He's got a hole in the water.
Well, and you see it's an adult and two babies.
Two little ones.
Yeah, exactly. So she probably was cleaning something there and went over and fed the young ones and maybe even eating some of that poison ivy. They're not allergic to it like we are. So. But beaver and muskrat are both pretty common along Iowa rivers, and usually what you look for is those cut trees or cut branches, or in the case of beaver, sometimes muskrat. Both of them have entrance holes under the water, the surface of the water, so it's often hard to see them.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we are paddling on the Skunk River with wildlife biologist Jim Pease.
Those bugs right in front of you, see them all on the surface? Those are water striders. Water striders, they're an insect, a true bug actually, that literally walks on the water on their six legs. They spread their weight out and make use of the surface tension. Even of a flowing river here, these happen to be not in the main current, but certainly off on the side. But they're wonderful little water striders, and if you look close enough, they'll get bigger over the summer, and they'll get maybe an inch across. Not the bodies, but the stretch of the legs from one side to the other. A fun river critter to watch develop as we paddle along.
Well, this is a great way to see the changing of the seasons too, and so many different things going on during different parts of the spring and the summer and the fall.
Yeah, in fact, it's one of my favorite things to do is to paddle at different seasons of the year, because we're gonna have to go to the right here, Em. Because of the differences in the river, not just the river. The shallowness of the river, which we're experiencing right now as it is in midsummer, but the changes in the wildlife, the changes in the vegetation along the shore. So we'll see at this time of year, we can see wood ducks on almost every Iowa river, and the mother wood duck is very protective, but in a really fun way. She will do what's called the broken wing trick, which we usually think of birds like killdeer doing, where they're trying to keep you away from their nest. Mother wood ducks, however, will do it after, once they've hatched from the holes in trees that may be as much as a mile away from water. She will walk them to the river, and will if a paddler comes along and she feels threatened, she hides them in one of those log piles on the edge of the river, and then comes out into the middle of the river, feigning like she can't fly, like one wing is like, oh my gosh, I can't fly, follow me, look at over here, follow me, and she'll take you down a couple of hundred yards through two or three turns of the river, and all of a sudden she learns how to fly, and flies over your head right back to her babies farther up river. So it's a great time to see that at this time of year. Later in the fall, you'll see other birds on the river migrating, because our rivers are migratory corridors for so many things, ducks and shorebirds and lots of songbirds. The warblers that come through early in the spring, I was out on the river when the first big warbler migration came through, and you could see 20 species in a day with no problem at all. And while we have a couple of species that nest here during the summer, and you can see them along our rivers, to see that many species at once is really special. Well, in the fall, not only are the leaves changing and making this magnificent canvas of color for us, but the birds are changing then too. And so you're seeing all the migratory birds in the fall of the year. Even in winter, if you have the right clothing, you wear a wetsuit, you take all those precautions, there are folks who go out in the middle of the winter on open sections of the river and actually paddle as well. So you can use our rivers in all seasons of the year.
So, Jim, one of the things that has changed a lot since you started paddling as a younger man in Iowa is that a lot of Iowa's rivers actually are now home to bald eagles.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, and we've done programs on eagles before, but whenever I'm out on the river, it really comes home to me how much progress we have made. Things are different. When I was a child growing up in southeastern Iowa, the only time I would see eagles was in the winter when they would come down from the north, and they were almost all adults. We could see them in the wintertime below the dams and places where the river would stay open all winter, and they'd be fishing. Again, they were almost all adults because in those years there was hardly any recruitment, hardly any young were making it into the ranks of eagles. So the population was shrinking. 1973, we banned DDT. As a society, we made the right decision. And that too was a controversial decision, but it was the right one to make. And since then, it's amazing how much things have recovered. Bald eagles, peregrine falcons, pelicans, anything at the top of the food chain is now doing much, much better. When we began to have eagles back in Iowa, in the late 70s and early 80s, I thought maybe Iowa was too tame and eagles were too wild to ever have many, and I thought we'd have some maybe along the Mississippi and that. But boy, was I wrong. It's just amazing how they've done. We now have eagles on every interior river in the state. We have over 300 nests. And I know it's over 300 because I've seen dozens as I paddled the 28 or so rivers along the way. So they're doing very, very well, and I'm happy to report that we did make the right decision, and we're continuing to see the response. We're going to have to duck here again.
Jim, there are lots and lots of different ways to get out and enjoy nature in Iowa, but I suspect this is your favorite. Am I right?
Yeah, paddling, I guess, has to be my favorite way. I'm a backpacker, a paddler. I paddled sea kayaks and backpacked all kinds of places and led lots of trips, hike, but paddling is very, very much my favorite. You know, I have a fishing boat that I thought I would use, but I really find I much prefer to paddle. I can see more, I can experience more by going slow in the paddle, in canoe or kayak along the river, and I just enjoy it a whole lot more. So absolutely, this is my favorite way. Not necessarily everybody's, but certainly is my favorite way to enjoy the outdoors.
Jim Pease, thank you so much for taking us paddling with you today.
My pleasure. I'm glad to have you along, and let's do this again. Duck!
Today we've been paddling on the Skunk River in Story County. Our guide, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, of course, he comes by every couple of months to share information about Iowa's wild animals and wild places with us. Today we have gone out in the wilderness to learn about Iowa's water and our waterways. This program is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producer and bow paddler today is Emily Woodbury. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Down by the river, I was strong by your grace, and to tear myself oblivion into the lover's place. I was stuck in a puddle full of tears and unwise, stuck doing snow and ice.